This is Vectis Radio.
For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and our very own Judith and Jane Vaux. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Joan.
Pleasure. And you do the James and Judy show.
Yes, we do, on Wednesday afternoons between 1pm and 4pm. It's sort of three shows in one, really, because every alternate Wednesday between 2 and 3, we do a show for Visit Isle of Wight, which, as you know, is the local tourist authority. And we talk about all things tourism to try and attract more visitors to our beautiful, beautiful island. A recording of our show goes up on the Visit Isle of Wight website so that visitors can listen there as well and have audio content as well as reading the content that's on the site otherwise. And then on the Wednesdays we're not doing the Visit Isle of Wight show, we do the hospice show, which is huge fun, isn't it, James?
Yeah, we've been doing that I think for about 3 months now. What we do is work with a lady there called Marianne Tusker, who's wonderful, and she's been tasked with not only putting this show together, but getting a lot of artistic activity going on at the hospice. So she will do, for example, on Wednesday evenings, there's a sort of craft evening that they do. She comes in, and together with Chip, who people will know for his dance show on Sundays, we put together a show that involves patients, people working at the hospice, and reports really on what's going on at the hospice. So if there's going to be a concert or a special event there, we'll report on that. Chip most recently went down there because some alpacas were brought into the hospice.
Fantastic.
Which was really, really sweet, and a lot of the patients got to meet these alpacas and pet them, so we were reporting on that.
Have they come all the way from freshwater?
No, it wasn't from that alpaca farm. They were from Ventnor, I believe.
Yes, there's a place called Milford Dell, which works to support adults with various forms of disability, and they have land. And they have, I think, chickens and maybe goats, and they have alpacas. They have two alpacas, and they brought these two alpacas into the hospice just over a week ago.
And they must have caused quite a stir.
I think they did, and we weren't there. Chip was representing Vectis Radio that day, and the staff had brought the patients in their beds down from the ward down to the John Cheverton Centre, which, as you probably know, is a day centre.
Very modern wing.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Lovely place.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And the alpacas came in, very, very pleased to report that there wasn't a Blue Peter moment, that the alpacas managed to behave themselves till they were safely outside. And I think everybody had a really good day.
Yeah, then one of the therapists actually gave an alpaca some Reiki treatment.
Really?
Yeah.
What did that entail?
I don't know. I think it's a bit
James
of a massage.
Being indiscreet, actually.
Oh, am I? I'm sorry.
I'm not sure that was for public consumption.
Oh, was it not? I thought that was. I'm sorry.
But one thing that we have.
Perhaps she was just gathering wool.
But one thing that we've really learnt from doing the hospice show is that the hospice is an amazing place, and it's full of light and love and hope, and that there are so many things going on in the John Cheverton Centre, aren't there, for the public?
Yes,
for everybody.
Exactly. I mean, these craft sessions on a Wednesday night are for members of the public to come in, and I think there are some people who are, you know, being treated at the hospice going to those, but it's a lot of sort of walk-in people who haven't really been into the John Cheverton Centre before, and they're trying to dispel this sort of myth that death is something to be completely avoided, and you mustn't talk about it at all. And I actually think the John Cheverton Centre is one of the nicest spaces for performance or for people to get together on the whole island.
It's full of light, isn't it?
It is. It's very beautifully designed, and they have monthly concerts there, usually on a Thursday evening. Again, open to everybody, and they're very lovely. And our colleague Marion from the hospice, as well as running her art group on Wednesday evenings, she runs something called the Death Chat on a Tuesday
evening.
Oh,
I've heard about this.
Yeah,
yes.
Again, that's open to everybody. And it's really to break down the taboos surrounding death. And so you feel free to sort of share your thoughts, perhaps confront your fears in a very supportive, safe environment.
Is that well attended?
It is. It is very well attended. And the other thing which I think is being launched today is a counselling service for children who've been bereaved.
That's right, through Kissy Puppy.
Through Kissy, the charity Kissy Puppy. Yes. Mm. And again, the children who've been bereaved, they it's not necessary that their loved one has died in the hospice. You know, children who've been bereaved under any circumstances whatsoever are very, very welcome to go along to use this service. It's a system of self-referral, so you don't have to be referred by your GP. And it sounds an amazing initiative.
Yeah, I think what's good about it is that you know, I think children who have lost somebody very close to them often feel very isolated, and this is a way of not just getting some, you know, one-on-one therapy. It's about meeting other children who are in the same position.
Exactly.
And I think they can gain a lot of strength from that.
Yeah, and I think there are group activities for the kids, so that they can sort of work together on arts and other projects and work through their feelings in that way if they want to. But it's also a support group for their parents and their carers.
Yes, and what about, is there a sort of, and on the other side, is there a service for bereaved parents?
Well, there is a bereavement service generally, which the hospice offers.
Right.
So
but that is something very specific, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
To outlive your child is just wrong.
Absolutely. So I'm sure that parents could contact the hospice and link into their general bereavement service and have specific help for that too.
And where can people, I know obviously on the Earl Mountbatten Hospice website,
yes.
but is there any other way people can access this information? Because what you're telling me I was completely unaware of, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners were too.
Well, I think the best place to start would be the hospice website. Marion was saying that in relation to the bereavement service for children, the hospice has been working with head teachers, with the police, with the doctors on the island to spread the word to them as well, because often those people would be the first port of call.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, people can listen to sort of catch-ups of the hospice show under the community shows tab on Vectis Radio, and we actually gave a telephone number, I don't have it with me now, to ring about this Kissy Puppy bereavement service, and we gave that out on Wednesday, so people just listen to that.
A new hospice show goes out every other Wednesday.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that's fantastic. I did a show there once with Donna Jones, the poet, and it was to raise funds for the hospice, and we did it there. And it was a great night. We had a fantastic audience, but I was just recovering from a flu. And I had a cough.
Poor you.
I kept it under wraps, you know, lots of water,
lots
of apple juice, and completed my set, and I thought, fantastic, I made it through to the end. And there was one last person due to go on, and I suddenly got this terrible little niggle.
Oh, no.
And that I'd run out of any kind of fluid.
Oh.
So Donna had a half-drunk orange juice, so I thought, I'm having that, so I just necked that. And still it came, still this niggling, horrible cough. And so I've resorted, we were sitting on the edge of the stage in a little sofa by the French window, so I resorted in kind of doing this barrel roll over the back of the sofa, and then I'm thinking, well, the sofa will give me that kind of barrier so the audience can't hear it.
Baffle the noise.
Yes, but it was this hacking cough. So I thought, this isn't working. And Donna, of course, leaning over, going, what's wrong with you? You know, could you say, be quiet, shut up. But so with that, I thought, well, I'll cough into a handbag then.
So, As you do.
Yeah. So I thought, another muffling instrument. So I'm coughing into the handbag. Still not working. I'm feeling absolutely wretched and terrible because this poor person is trying to perform over this cough. But I couldn't get out because it would have meant going across the front of the audience.
Yeah.
So I'm rattling these French doors now, making even more of a show and even more. But of course, they were firmly bolted. So I just had to lie there with Donna going, well, you shut up. It was just horrific. But anyway, it was a lovely gig, and thank you ever so much, everybody who came and endured that. But apparently the audience didn't hear a thing.
Oh, good.
It was that awful thing.
It's feel worse about it.
Yes.
And they do have so many nice events there. We've actually been to a play reading there as well.
Yes.
Which was a play by a very well-known playwright called Brian Daniels. He's also an actor. And it was called Don't Leave Me Now. And it was the story of two very different families who'd been affected in very different ways, each family having a family member with dementia. It was very moving, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
It was,
and we that lad who was in with his ukulele, the other day as well, gave a concert.
Yes, I've forgotten his name.
Yeah, I've forgotten his name. We keep seeing him about on the streets.
yeah, the concerts, I'd highly recommend the concerts. They're very varied and, so, you know, something for everyone.
So keep an eye on the website.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or listen to our show.
Listen to the show, yeah. It's just under community shows at vectisradio.com. Now, Joan, you did another performance, didn't you, at the Literary Festival last week,
did.
I understand. How did that go?
I did it with Donna Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. It was brilliant. We had a fantastic audience, which was lovely, and they were so warm and friendly. It was great. Yeah, and we were in the chandelier lit dining room.
Oh, how lovely. How
nice. Next to the ballroom.
Oh, how nice.
And we'd been in the green room with Simon Callow.
Oh!
But I put on Facebook, I'm here with Simon Cowell.
Oh, no.
And my friends are going, so you're at the X Factor? I'm like, no, what are you talking about? And then I said, no, Simon Cowell. And they went, oh, him. And I thought, no, you shouldn't want to be with Simon Cowell. You should want to be with Simon Callow.
I agree.
We ended up having lunch next to him and Stephen Fry at the Ivy once, didn't we?
Yeah.
They were sat at the table next to us. It was about... We'd gone for early supper at 5:30 because that's the only time plebs can get in. And it was a pre-theatre supper. They were still there from lunch on something like their third or fourth bottle of wine.
Sounds about right, yeah.
And of course, you know, we couldn't speak to each other, could we? Because their conversation was so entertaining.
Yeah, they were being very thespian, show-offy, speaking very loudly, but it was huge fun.
Well, I was in there with Simon on my own for quite a while, and he looked quite busy on his laptop, but in the end, I thought, well, I'll talk to him about my frock that I'm wearing. So I went over, and it actually was my mother's frock from the 60s.
Oh.
So we had a little chat about that, and he very much approved.
Oh, how nice. Real vintage.
Yes, it was. But we had to walk, because obviously there was hordes of people queuing for the ballroom to see Simon Callow and the rest of the performers for that talk. And Donna and I were sort of battling our way through the crowds and thought, well, they're all here for them. You know, we haven't got anybody. But no, they were some plenty for us and plenty for them.
Well, that's good.
Well,
which
done.
Was really, really
lovely. Yeah, it was very well attended, wasn't it? We went on the Sunday and... Yeah, definitely going for a lot longer next year.
Yeah, well, come and see us next
we
year.
Will do, for sure. Next year, I think I'm going to get one of those passes.
Yes,
for several days.
Very good idea.
Because we went on Sunday and we each went to one lecture. I went to the lecture about Jane Eyre and the reasons for her sort of, you know, the continuing resonance of that novel. That was a really good discussion.
And yeah, I couldn't think of anything worse. So at exactly the same time, luckily, Kamal Ahmed was over from the BBC, and he gave a very, very good talk about Brexit.
Doesn't he look young in True Life?
He does. Apparently his girlfriend looks even younger. That's what we were told in the green room, and because we missed him there. And he was very, very good, actually, very impartial. Yes. Unlike the BBC is usually about Brexit, he was, played it very, very straight, and I think everyone came out of that talk with a better understanding. But he managed
more optimistic, would you say?
Yes, I think so. I think he was very good at not sort of allowing sort of people's hackles to rise, and played it quite straight. Yeah, I think even though he probably is personally against Brexit, I think he feels reasonably optimistic that in 5 years we'll be, in a reasonably decent place.
Yes, well, we've got to embrace the change because there
exactly.
is no option.
I agree. We've all got to sort of move forward, pull together, and try and make the most of it, haven't we?
Because it is what it is, to use that hideous phrase.
Absolutely, and we just have to make the best of it.
Now, just before we came on air, we were having a little chat, and James, Judy popped in with, she said you did a spot of Morris dancing.
Oh, well, no, actually, there's nothing worse I can think about than Morris dancing, but I'm going to be forced to do it. I think Oscar Wilde said you must try everything once in life apart from incest and Morris dancing. And there is nothing I hate more than Morris dancing, but...
Except incest.
Well said. Yeah, thank you for reminding me. Joe Plum, who is now here on Vectis Radio, has got a wonderful stage company called the South Bank Theatre Company. They just did One Man, Two Governors over at the Shanklin Theatre.
What a great...
Which was fun, wasn't it?
Great place.
And we went to see Macbeth that they did at Aspire in Ryde, which was terrific.
It was an all-female Macbeth, and it was sort of a promenade performance, so we were sort of following the actors from sort of room to room.
Yeah.
It was one of the best Macbeths I've seen, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, about 3 months ago, I sat up in bed one morning, and Judith and I are real early risers. We're always sort of on our iPads at sort of 5:30 or 6. 6 o'clock, I get this email from Joe Plum via Facebook.
No, let's rewind. You are on your iPads between 5:30 a.m. Well, and 6 a.m.
normally about 5, yeah. Yes, we wake up at very early.
Well, we're sort of busy trying to expand our media empire.
Yeah, exactly.
We?
So we're always we're writing our emails first thing.
We're doing our emails, getting emails out of the way.
So you're early birds.
Early birds.
Yeah, real early birds,
and
yeah.
What time do you go to bed?
Ooh.
8 o'clock.
Oh, well, I guess that makes sense then. So you're round the other way.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, we used to stay up late, but nowadays, you know, on the island with no electricity out there, you know, it's you sort of go to sleep when the sun goes down, don't you?
Well, I think that is a point, because we always lived in central London, and, you know, we're right in the middle of town, lots of street lighting, lots of noise, a lot of bars outside in the evenings, which is good. But we kind of really relish the quiet here and sort of tend to go to bed earlier and get up earlier and make the most of the daylight, really.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Exactly. So sorry, I interrupted there, Joan. Carry on.
Anyway, 6 o'clock in the morning, this Facebook Messenger message comes through from Joe Plum saying, would I like this role in One Man, Two Governors? So, I haven't acted for 10 years, and he didn't even know about that, so he'd obviously sort of somehow chosen me for this role.
And what role was it? The main role?
No, it wasn't the main role. It was, I don't know, sort of medium role in One Man, Two Governors.
So I was limited rushing around.
Limited rushing around. But, you know, it was a good role. So I said, yes, please, thank you. You know, I'd be really, really interested in talking to you about it. And then I realised that he had sent that message something like 6 weeks before. And there was a glitch in Facebook Messenger earlier this year that if you hadn't accepted people as a sort of Facebook Messenger buddy or something like that, these things would just get stuck in the system forever.
Right.
So by the time, you know, I got back to him and we realised this, that the role had gone. He just thought I'd been rude and hadn't got back. So I said, yes, I'd be interested in doing the next something on the next thing that he does. And he's going to be doing a wonderful production. We hope it's going to be a wonderful production of Jerusalem. Now, if you remember, Jerusalem was the play that Mark Rylance was in at the Royal Court Theatre, won lots of awards. It's about a sort of ruffian who lives in a caravan called Johnny Byron. And this is going to be on at the Key Arts in April. Now, I have been cast as a coke-snorting Morris dancer who is a publican who's forced to do Morris dancing by his brewery.
Right, so how much training are you going to have to do for that?
I honestly don't know. That's all I know. I don't know when we start. I've got the script. He doesn't know I've got the script, but I've got to say some pretty appalling words, actually.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the worst word you can say.
Right.
Yeah, on a number of occasions. Yes. And
how much Morris dancing is there in the script?
A little bit of Morris dancing. Yeah. So I do need to sort of wear a Morris dancing uniform.
So that's handkerchiefs, bells.
Handkerchiefs and bells, and that sort of
and ribbons
and socks.
And
yeah.
Socks.
Yeah, and I think there's a hat involved as well.
But it's almost alpine, isn't it?
Yes, it is,
it
actually.
Is. It is.
I agree, yes. But you do have experience of dancing, because you have done a lot of minuetting in your dim and distant past.
Ah, yes,
you?
That's true, yes. When I was at university.
Are you light on your feet, James?
Lighter than I would appear.
You are, actually, and I think a lot of people, you don't expect to be light on their feet, actually. Sometimes are quite surprising.
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
But unfortunately, the last time I was on stage, I managed to hospitalise a girl.
Yes, that's the story I was really trying to get to.
Well, yeah.
This is the one. Please, tell all.
I took a year off work about 12 years ago and went to... we travelled around the world a bit, but that we then saw an advert in the paper which said that the people who were doing Mamma Mia... on the West End stage were offering this course where over the course of 3 days they would train you up to do all the singing and all the dancing, and then you could put on an abbreviated version before the actual version of Mamma Mia went on stage in the afternoon in front of your family and friends.
Sounds fantastic.
Which sounded amazing. I had been doing dancing lessons at Pineapple with a girl who did a lot of, she's called Paulette Minot, who taught a lot of people how to do dancing for pop videos, who was so embarrassed by my attempts that she would actually tape a black plastic bag over the window of the dance studios at Pineapple so the other students couldn't see what I was doing. However, I had 10 of these lessons, and by the end of it, I felt very, very confident.
Was that misplaced confidence?
It was completely misplaced confidence. Unfortunately, when I got to these rehearsals and they had said, you know, no previous experience necessary, it was full of a lot of wannabes and, you know, particularly a lot of 16 to 18 year old girls who were studying drama and dancing and things like that. And when I was doing the dancing in Mamma Mia, I kept jumping on the toe, which had unfortunately been previously broken, of the girl next to me. And, you know, not surprisingly, she didn't enjoy that. It was sort of made a bit tenser and worse by the fact that we weren't told, but the Richard and Judy show were covering the whole event, so we had TV cameras around us, plus Hugo Rifkin from The Times was there reporting on us,
so just no pressure. The ante just a little bit.
So I had to I had to actually get the dance captain to do the moves for me while I videoed him from behind, and then practice these at home until 3 o'clock every morning, much to the annoyance of the neighbours downstairs.
Yeah, we were in a London flat at that point.
Anyway, on the Saturday, it comes to the performance, and I said to this girl, you know, don't worry, you know, after, you know, in half an hour's time, I'll never be able to hurt you again.
That sounds wrong.
Which sounds wrong. And anyway, at the end, we do this in front of the audience, and there are about 200 people there, which is lovely. We go to have our certificates presented to us, and I notice she's sort of sitting down over there, and the guy presenting the certificates has to go over and present the certificate to her sitting down. So I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, "Don't you realise what you've done?" And apparently, when we were doing some kind of twirl in midair, I had knocked her knee with my knee. I hadn't even felt it, Anyway, she, I think, had to go to hospital. And I got an email from her 3 months later saying, "You'll be pleased to know I can finally drive again."
Just drive, not dance. Walk. No.
but there was something else as well that always made me laugh, because James takes things very seriously, and he's a bit of a perfectionist. And as part of this Mamma Mia extract, they were performing the wedding scene, and James was a guest, and he was dancing with a girl, one of these young, impressionable teenage girls, who was his dance partner, and another guest. And James said to me afterwards, because he takes it very seriously and wanted it all to be very perfect, he said to her, "Look, while we're dancing, you've got to look at me as though you love me." And I was like, "James, you're probably on a register somewhere."
Yeah, I know.
And do you remember what Hugo Rifkin, the Times journalist, said about you when he wrote the article?
I was a mortified investment banker.
No, he said you were an overconfident merchant banker.
Oh. I'm always overconfident.
And then you did appear. There was a little clip of you.
There was on the Richard and Judy show. Sadly, lost forever.
Are you sure?
Luckily, lost forever. Yeah.
I think it's just such a shame we're on radio, because I'd like to see you breaking out your moves, James.
I can do some minuet dancing if you like, but it won't mean anything to anyone.
And just before we take the break, I need to know: were you in leg warmers?
No, absolutely not. Okay. No, I was in shorts.
Oh, he says that like that makes it so much better.
I think fluorescent, it makes it a lot worse.
Fluorescent lime shorts.
Pardon?
Fluorescent lime shorts.
Oh.
I remember.
Yeah, there are a bunch of scarred teenage girls out there now.
And well, now they're now, scarred.
Now, they're now in their late 20s. And probably
still in therapy.
Being pushed down the wedding aisle.
Wheeled. Now there's one very scarred, middle-aged broadcaster. Good grief. Right, I think we've got to have a break. I've got to go and have a lie down. Hang on. All right, we'll be back after this. Thank you so much for listening. And please listen in to some more, because goodness knows where this is going to go.
Stay social and get in touch. Give us a call on 01983 240 666.
Hello and welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my two very special guests, Judith and James Borks. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In the break, we were a change of mood slightly there, wasn't there? We were talking about dementia and the Admiral nurses and the wonderful work they're doing here on the island. And I know you know quite a bit about this, Julia.
Yes. Our friends and neighbours with Sally, Lady Grills. And it is Sally who has been instrumental and has spearheaded the campaign, which has been hugely successful, to bring five Admiral nurses to the island. Four are attached to St Mary's and one is attached to the hospice. And for those of our listeners who don't know about Admiral nurses, they are nurses who specialise in the care of dementia patients, their families and their carers, in the same way that Macmillan nurses specialise in care for cancer patients and their families. And until Sally started this project, we had no Admiral nurses on the island, and it's absolutely vital that we have them here, because as you were saying, Joan, when we were off air, we have a large elderly population here, and it's very, very necessary that dementia patients and their families and carers have this vital support. Now, Sally is not going to rest on her laurels, and she has a new venture. And her aim now is that there should be an Admiral nurse in every community.
Fantastic.
On the island.
Is that viable?
I think if Sally's behind it, you know, I honestly think anything is possible.
Oh, that's great to hear.
And her idea is that if you have an Admiral nurse in a village, and as so often happens, a dementia patient is confused and wanders off and gets lost, you can call upon the Admiral nurse for help in that sort of situation to help with the patient. But also if you're a carer, a relative, and you're at your wit's end because you're trying to cope with a loved one who has dementia, then you can turn to the Admiral nurse for help and support yourself. And Sally is hoping to start this project off in Bembridge, where she and we live, and where there is a large elderly population. So the aim is that Bembridge would be the first community in the island to have an Admiral nurse, but it would spread from there. And we're trying to help Sally with this. So on the 20th of November at 3 o'clock in Bembridge Village Hall, we're going to show the film The Lady in the Van. Yes. I don't know if you've seen
with
it.
With Maggie Smith,
yep. Based upon the Alan Bennett play, and bizarrely a true story. Talk about truth being stranger than fiction. There'll be a tea after that film, and Sally is going to use that event to launch this new initiative to raise funds to have an Admiral nurse in Bembridge, and with the hopes that then other communities will pick up this idea, run with it, and they too will get involved in raising the funds for an Admiral nurse in their community too.
Do you know, I mean, what sort of figures are we talking?
I don't know actually how much it...
what it costs
to introduce an Admiral nurse. Is it something like £30,000?
So something like that. But I think once some kind of year has passed and a need has been proven, then I think it gets picked up by the NHS.
And then I think the NHS takes over. My understanding is, and I apologise, Sally, or to anybody else who's listening if I get this wrong, I think it's necessary to find the funds for the first year's salary an Admiral nurse. And then, as James says, they become embedded in and funded by the NHS.
I see.
But if anybody's listening who is interested and would like to come along and see that film and hear more about this initiative, you'd be most welcome.
Fantastic.
Yeah, there are more details at www.ramshacklecinema.co.uk.
Okay.
So,
thank you. So that brings me on to Ramshackle Cinema. And that's your pop-up initiative, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, well, it's more of a nailed-down initiative now, because we... one of the things that was driving us berserk about showing cinema films in Bembridge was the fact that we had to sort of do the equipment every time we wanted to show a film. We had to sort of drag it out of the garage, haul it into the village hall. It was very, very heavy, and set it up, and that was taking about 5 hours for every film.
Yes.
So we've now got equipment permanently installed, and we've got surround sound, Dolby stuff, there now. And yeah, what we try to do is have different seasons of films where we'll have some good old ones and some good new ones. But a lot of film clubs on the Isle of Wight love putting on films from the 40s and the 50s and things like that. That's not really our kind of thing. I mean, when we talk about old films, we'll never do anything more than about 20 years old.
Okay, so what is your kind of thing?
Well, we try to have themes. So this year, as you'll know, it was the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. So this year we've been having a Shakespeare season. We have shown a very modern American adaptation of Much Ado. Recently, we showed a fantastic version of Richard III with Ian McKellen, which was based upon a National Theatre production. And then we showed a fabby Shakespeare-related film called Anonymous, which raises the question, well, was it really Shakespeare who wrote the Shakespeare plays, or was it Edward de Vere, the Earl of Oxford? Yeah. So we tried to have a theme because we just feel it gives a bit of... Yeah. This is going to sound really pretentious. A bit of sort of intellectual heft to the whole thing.
Yeah, and we got three productions from the Globe Theatre that were filmed live at the Globe. Mm-hmm. That we did. We like to do operas occasionally, so January is going to be a little mini opera season. We're going to do Florence Foster Jenkins, you know, which is that recent film about that lady who had a terrible voice in the United States.
Yes, I know that.
A socialite who really couldn't sing for toffee, but that was rather sadly. It's possibly because she developed syphilis and was sort of unaware, unfortunately.
It was a really tragic story. The story was set, a true story, the story was set in, I think, about the 1940s when this lady was in her, what would we say, 60s?
Yeah, 50s or 60s.
50s or 60s, and she had contracted syphilis at the age of 18, she said very poignantly on her wedding night. Mm. And apparently, I didn't realise this. I mean, it is a very insidious, invasive, horrible, horrible disease, but it can also, and I hadn't realised, affect the vocal cords.
Right.
And this may have been one reason why her voice was so bad. And it was a very poignant story.
Because she was protected by this sort of English guy who's played by Hugh Grant. Mm. I mean, Florence Foster Jenkins herself is played by Meryl Streep incredibly well. It just shows what happens when people are overprotected because they end up, you know, becoming a laughing stock.
In their own little bubble.
Sadly, yes.
But also, she had heaps of money to throw at it as well. So she could afford to hire the Carnegie Hall. There was kind of nothing stopping her to doing this.
Apart from lack of talent.
Exactly. I mean, so that's quite a... It's an interesting film. It's not one... you know, if you're an opera lover, listening to her sing is not something...
Can I just ask, is it open all year round, or do you have a season?
We show our films on Sunday afternoons and in the winter, really. So we tend to start our season in October and we run through until March.
Is there a membership?
No, not
at all. It's open to anybody. We find that there are quite a lot of elderly people living by themselves in Bembridge, and it's quite nice for them to have something to do on a Sunday afternoon, which I think can be quite a lonely time.
Yes.
The Ride Lions come along and they make the most fantastic full afternoon tea, all the works.
Repeat that, please, because I think that's what we're all really listening
for. Ride Lions, full afternoon tea.
Sandwiches, cakes, scones,
homemade,
cream.
Homemade, loving it.
All homemade.
Huge portions.
Huge portions.
I'll keep on, more.
So you can come along, you can see a film, then we all sit down together at communal tables and have tea, so you have something really nice to eat, you have some social interaction, and then you can go home before it gets too dark.
Fantastic.
And it's £10.
Tickets are £10, and that includes the tea and the film. £5 from each ticket goes towards the Ride Lions for their good works on the island, and the other £5 just covers our costs. We're not looking to make a profit.
It's a totally not for profit.
It's totally for loss, actually. But we've got another good opera coming up in January, at the end of January, which is Rossini's La Gazzetta, and it's never been shown in the UK before. It's from the...
Is that true?
Yeah, it's never been shown at a cinema in the UK before. It's from the Opera Lycia in Barcelona. Very, very nice production. So a very little known Rossini opera, but a good one.
So do you choose between the pair of you?
Yes. And
We have heated debates.
We have heated debates, and you'll know this, Joan, but next year is the 200th anniversary of Jane Austen's death. So when we've had our little mini opera season, we're going to be having a little Jane Austen season, and we're going to be showing Sense and Sensibility, that fantastic version with Emma Thompson. Yes. And then, I don't know if you've seen it, but there was an Austen film out this year called Love and Friendship.
No, I didn't see it.
Well, it's based on a little-known novella of Jane Austen's called Lady Susan. And it got 5-star reviews. So we're going to be showing that.
Mm, it's jolly good. We watched it the other night.
Fantastic. And then we have as I think I mentioned in the green room, we're introducing a series of talks. And then we're having a talk from a lady called Sarah Parry, who is coming from Chawton House in Chawton in Hampshire, which was the village where Jane Austen lived. And she will be telling us all about the historic houses and sites used in film and television adaptations of Jane Austen's work.
Interesting.
So we're sort of linking that in with our Jane Austen season.
And the talks are separate to the films,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes,
they stand independently.
Yes, they do. You don't need to have seen any of our films to enjoy the talks. So, for example, we have a talk coming up on Sunday week, which is the 30th of October, about Richard III, which is being given for us by Dr. Bronwyn Price, who's a principal lecturer in English literature at the University of Portsmouth. And you won't need to have seen our film version of Richard III to enjoy the talk.
No.
So the aim is that they're sort of complementary. If you want to do both, that's great, but if you want to do one or the other, that's fine too.
Because they're on a completely different timing, yes. Completely different locations, aren't
yes.
they?
Yes, yeah. We're holding our lectures in the Spinnaker, which for those of our listeners who don't know it, it's a rather nice sort of pub/hotel.
The Tower in Portsmouth.
No.
Everybody clear on that? Not the Tower in Portsmouth.
It's One Stain Road in Bembridge.
Yeah, there's a nice car park there. They've got a very, very nice conference room.
But are there cakes, Judy?
There will be cakes,
yes.
There'll
also be
cakes.
Lots of beer and crisps.
The tickets for the talks are £5 each, but the Spinnaker will be serving tea, coffee and cakes at the bar afterwards, which you can buy separately, or indeed, as I suspect James will be doing, you can buy yourself a glass of something stronger.
I certainly will be. And you can get more details at the website, which is www.ramshacklecine.co.uk. Or we tweet at Ramshackle Cine, or we're on Facebook at Ramshackle Cinema. So you can find out all about us online.
Brilliant. And I want to ask, because there are, you've mentioned that there are other film clubs on the island, including there's one at Ventnor, Freshwater.
Yeah, they're all over.
Yes, it's fantastic.
It's brilliant.
It
is brilliant.
Especially in the winter when
yes.
the movies start
yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think
are there cinema wars? Are there kind of film club
no,
wars?
No, absolutely not. Because we're very friendly with the people with the Ride Film Club. Bayrose Gandhi is one of the people who set it up.
They've just
started at the Commodore, and I think they're doing a terrific job there. I think what's interesting is that different film clubs do sort of different kinds of films, so that you can always find something that you like. For example, the Ride guys are doing a mixture of sort of modern international films and sort of old classics. I think the people at Ventnor Arts Club are sort of tending to do sort of modern international.
Yes, a lot of subtitle
art house films.
Yes.
Yeah, lots of subtitle films.
Saw a marvellous one there with a goat.
It was largely a goat. Was it Turkish?
I think it might have been, but it was delightful.
Was it?
Yeah. And he just went up on a hill and then he escaped. And there was a bit of village action, not a lot of action, mainly the goat. But it was mesmeric. I loved it.
They do some amazing ones. We went to see a lovely Japanese film there. But I think what we're trying to do is to sort of allow people in Bembridge to have a bit of a cosy Sunday afternoon. And the people do love opera, and they do love sort of live theatre and things like that. So wherever we can get it on Blu-ray, because we don't have the funds to have a sort of live satellite transmission of these things, but the Blu-rays that we use are as good as cinema high definition, and we've got Dolby surround sound, so it's a proper cinematic experience now.
So no flickering projection?
No,
absolutely not. No,
it's we've shown, as James has said, we've shown productions which were filmed live at the Globe, and we've also screened films of productions filmed live at Glyndebourne too.
Yeah.
So we have. It's taken us a little while to get to know our audience, hasn't it? But
we've
kind of realised they do kind of like a bit of cultural
interest. Yeah, it's operas, theatre, cultural stuff, and sort of stuff that we can unearth that people haven't really seen before. So Richard III, the Ian McKellen version, which this year was re-released by the BFI and remastered, it's just amazing. I mean, I don't know whether you've seen it, Joan, but it will blow you away. It's probably the best Shakespearean adaptation for film ever, set in the 1930s and in an imaginary fictional fascist state, but in England.
Yes. With sort of Nazi imagery, a lot of red, a lot of black, costume, uniforms.
Yeah, and just sensational.
Yeah, but, what I find really heartwarming is a lot of our audience, if they ring me up to ask me what we're showing or to book a ticket, they say, oh, we've never heard of this film, but we know you always choose really nice films. So, it's really encouraging that, and we've got such a loyal following. So I'd like to say thank you to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for listening.
We've got huge support.
It's a good job it's not me there. I'd be just having like Mary Poppins.
But incredible journey.
Actually, our first one was, what was that one about Mary Poppins?
It was Saving Mr. Banks.
Saving Mr. Banks, yeah.
That was our first one, actually.
That was good.
Yes. Yeah. Nothing wrong with Mary Poppins.
But after this, we are going to do something absolutely terrible. It's the McDonald's of films. We're going to see Dan Brown's Inferno at 2:10.
Oh, so you're blushing.
We should be blushing, shouldn't we?
No, blushing. I said rushing.
Oh, rushing. Rushing. No, we should be blushing.
You've said it live on air now.
Rushing and blushing.
I never asked you that question. You volunteered that information all on your own.
Yeah, I think it got 1 star from the Telegraph, so...
I think you've got to keep an open mind.
I agree. I mean, you have to sort of take what you can and experience what you can, and you will always get something from it, I think. And
Judith's little secret is that she loves any film that involves a president in danger.
A president of the United States.
Yeah, so we've been, Olympus has fallen, or White House down, or London has fallen, or something like that. It's just
very
perfect.
Topical at the moment.
Yep. Yeah. But you know they're always going to save him in the end. So you can sort of have all that tension and anxiety of, it's all going to come good.
Well, talking of tension and anxiety and all coming good, I want to, my next question, Judy, is tell us more about the Baroque recorder that you're teaching yourself.
Yes, well,
as you do.
As you do on these dark winter evenings. Well, it's a bit of a saga. For many years, since I was a kid, I've been playing the cello on and off. And it's...
That was just an
I find it a very difficult instrument. In some ways, it's quite easy to play, because if you imagine when you're sitting playing the cello, you're sitting in a very kind of natural, relaxed position, compared to, say, if you're playing the violin or viola, it's quite contorted the way your body has to move. So from that point of view, it's so far so good, but it is incredibly difficult, and I've decided enough. My family and friends have suffered for long enough.
Yes, yes.
So I grew up in a household where everybody played something, not well, but something, and so that you could make some sort of music together. So I've decided that I'm going to teach myself something really, really easy, which is the recorder. And like most kids, I learnt the descant recorder at school, and it's not a particularly attractive instrument, I think. And there's not much music written specifically for the descant recorder. So I did some research, and I found that there is a lot of repertoire. There's a huge repertoire of music written specifically for the tenor. No, it's not, is it? It's the treble.
It's
the treble. Which, so I don't even know which one I'm learning. So written specifically for the treble recorder. So for those of you who aren't familiar with it, if you think of the recorders as a family, there's the descant, which is the little one, then the treble, which is the next one up, and then the tenor is like sort of the granddaddy after that. Most of the music that's written for the treble recorder is either Renaissance music or Baroque music. So
there's lots of Telemann, isn't there?
There's quite a lot of Telemann. And because everybody thinks that the recorder is just the toy, I'm telling everybody that I'm learning the Baroque recorder, because it makes it sound more of a serious endeavour. So I've bought myself a plastic...
Now you've spoiled it by saying plastic.
But this is only temporary. Plastic recorder.
It's more hygienic, isn't it?
It's more hygienic because you can wash it, folks, if you get a sore throat, as I've been doing. Dried off in the airing cupboard, and it sounds even better. Anyway, so I'm teaching myself on this plastic recorder. And then once I've cracked it a bit more than I have already. I'm going to buy myself a sort of wooden recorder, and that gives you more of the Baroque sound. So watch this space. Poor James, it's much better for you, isn't
so,
it?
So, James, what's your take on it? I mean, what's your definition of it? Is it better than the normal recorder?
Well, I mean, the sound of sort of horsehair scraping on gut, which is basically what a cello is, has never really done it for me.
No, I don't think I've ever heard it described quite like that.
That's because you haven't heard me trying to play it.
Oh, Judith had the most wonderful teacher, who is a really serious cellist.
Yeah, big shout out to Gabby Swallow.
To Gabby Swallow, and she was married to a very famous composer, Mark Anthony Turnage. And poor Judith was, for one of her lessons, forced to play a duet with Gabby in front of Mark Anthony Turnage, and he is one of the top three composers in the country at the moment.
But it was, I mean...
And, you know, hats off to you, Judith, for doing it, and...
How did that go, Judith?
It was terrible, frankly, because for Gabby, performance is everything. And it's right, if you're learning a musical instrument, you know, performance has to be one of your goals.
Yes.
So she thought it would be lovely if we worked together on a duet, and we played the duet for Mark. So I mean, Mark is incredibly famous in musical circles. We'll tell you about one of his operas in a minute. And so I said, look, Gabs, why don't you and Mark come round for supper one Sunday night? We'll have a bite to eat and then we can play for Mark. So I said to James, quick, as soon as Mark arrives, give him as much alcohol.
Slip him some Rohypnol.
Deaden his senses.
Or put on some marvellous recording.
Yeah, exactly.
Mime along.
So, talk about baptism of fire.
I know, I think you were very, very brave to do that.
But he was charming. I mean, it must have been awful for him. I mean, you know, it must have been absolutely terrible, but he was very sweet and very polite.
Yeah, he was.
And I think for Gabby, it was important too, you know, so that he knew, you know, he could see...
The wealth of her talent.
The work that she did and how it's been squandered on me. You know, so, but sort of going back to Mark, I would just be quite interesting if we have time to tell you about one of his operas.
Anna Nicole. Yeah, Anna Nicole, if you remember, was an actress and film star in the United States who married a very old gentleman.
She looked a little bit like Marilyn Monroe.
That's right. A sort of chubbier version of Marilyn
Page
Monroe.
Three, but sort of centrefold. Playboy centrefold.
Exactly.
Isn't she?
Yeah. But with the libretto by the guy who, I've forgotten his name, who did Jerry Springer, the opera.
Richard Thomas,
I think you're right. Mark did this opera, Anna Nicole, at the Royal Opera House, and it's just been reprised last year as well.
It was amazing, and the whole premise of the opera was really about sort of this whole idea of 15 minutes of fame.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we went to the opening night.
We did, it was
lovely. It was very glitzy, it was too. I was sitting next to...
We were also invited to the opening night party, but because of my, as you heard earlier, my singular failure to connect with Facebook correctly, we never got the message, so we never went to the party.
James, you tell me you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do this stuff, and then you miss these really key messages.
I know. It's the technology letting me down, as opposed...
Perhaps you're too early.
Perhaps I am.
Yeah, perhaps she hasn't woken up.
An early adopter.
But I was sitting next to Graham Norton, so it was pretty star-studded, the whole event.
Yeah.
I think the pair of you are just star-studded, aren't you?
No, we're not.
Oh, I think you are. You're very erudite. It's nice, and it's been lovely.
You should hear us at home.
Because you have kind of put a little precursor in front of most things you've said to me, and you said, as you know, Joan, and clearly I know nothing, but I really appreciate the fact you thought I might, and you're sweet enough to suggest I might, but I don't. So it's been wonderful. So I've learnt so much from you both, and it's been an absolute pleasure having you both here.
Oh, thank
it's
you
been
so
lovely
much
joining
for having
you.
Us.
Thank
it's been
you.
Huge fun being this side of the desk.
And it's just run, we just ran out of time so quickly.
Already?
So will you promise to come back?
We promise
for
we
sure.
will. We've got to run off to Inferno to see Dr. Robert Langdon.
You said it again. They'd forgotten about that bit. The glitch. It had all been so highbrow. They've just ruined it. Okay. Well, thank you both very, very much.
Pleasure.
And please join me next Friday when I will be talking about Welcome, which is a special group, a special initiative set up by June Bartram and Donna Jones to welcome the refugees to our island. So please join me for that talk, which I think is going to be really interesting. Have a lovely weekend, enjoy a beautiful island, and thank you so much for listening. Bye bye now.
www.vectisradio.com.